2025 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. On behalf of the board, I'd like to wish everybody a happy new year. So here we go, 2025. I'm going to tell you how old I am. Well, I won't tell you how old I am, but you can guess. But I remember in 2020 sitting in my office at Manson Elementary School because I was in charge of technology, just turning on the computers, waiting for them to all crash with Y2K. Do you remember, anybody remember that?
2000.
What did I say, 2020?
2020.
Yeah, 2000. That was 25 years ago. So anyway, memories. Anyway, welcome and happy new year, and glad you're here today. I'd like to thank everybody for participating and remind everybody to silence their electronic devices. Today's meeting is a study and business session in which should be completed this morning. There is no executive session scheduled on the agenda. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to provide comments and ask specific questions after each item presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, time will be provided. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand after the presentation has been made, and we'll invite you to come up to the microphone and speak. When recognized, come up to the microphone and you'll have 3 minutes. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have five commissioners present. Kirk Hudson, General Manager, Acting General Counsel Daniel Apple, and kind of tag teaming with Rebecca online and Teresa here present, Clerk of the Board. So we welcome, appreciate everybody's help. At this point, we'd like to have Tim Jacobs come up and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, before we get too far into this, and Tim, I'll be with you back in just a few minutes to finish up your part of this, but to keep us all legal, and we have Skip Moore here today joining us from Chelan County, who will be swearing in Randy and myself. So welcome, Chip.
Where do you want to do it?
Let's, how about right here in front of the desk?
Skip, before you start, she's going to grab the mic for you.
I could bring the stand over if that's easier.
Are you ahead?
Yeah, why not?
Somehow
I'll go up there.
Okay.
How do you want this?
On your knees.
when I get to this point here, it says Office of
I state your name.
I am Randy Smith.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support.
That I will support.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Washington.
And the Constitution of the State of Washington.
And will faithfully and impartially.
And will faithfully and impartially.
Perform the duties of.
Perform the duties of.
The Office of Chelan County Public Utility District Commissioner District. Chelan
District 2.
Perfect. To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
Thank you, gentlemen. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now I'll need you to sign to make it all
duly official.
I
commissioners.
With skim?
Yeah. I'm going to take the liberty of something that's not on the agenda, and I'd like...
Can I get to the mic, please? I can, thank you.
And I would like Gary Arsenal to stand up, please. So, Gary, it is my distinct pleasure to present to you your 10-year service award to Chelan County PUD.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll introduce myself real quick. So for those who don't know me, my name is Tim Jacobs. I am a safety coordinator here at the PUD. I work at Rock Island Dam. So I've been here for about 6 months now. I started in July of 2024. So it's been a great time, getting to learn the dams, learning the differences in generation versus what I used to do before when I worked in the paper mill and lumber mill industries. I'll begin the electrical safety minute. So I'll keep it pretty short. But one thing, I want to talk about is, how household electrical safety is important, just like workplace electrical safety. So first thing, you want to make sure and inspect your cords. So every year you might have things like Christmas cords, Christmas tree lights. If you do any outdoor work, you have those electrical extension cords that, you drape along the outside, maybe along the roof to do your Christmas lights, or maybe you have an electric lawnmower. Those can get damaged, and if you don't, properly inspect them, you could have a short in the line, or it could, cause an electrocution. And so it's important, even at home, to inspect things, because we think about at work, we always inspect our cords. We have, inspections monthly or every couple months for most cords. But at home, it's something you don't usually think about. So something you might want to take a look at. Overloading circuits. So if you ever, behind your couch or something, you might plug in, phone charger. You got, like I said, Christmas lights. You have all these number of things that you plug in to these circuit boards. Essentially, if there's too much plugged into them, in the photo, you can see there's a circuit breaker connected to another circuit breaker, and so that basically can overload the circuit. And so what can happen is there's so much electricity in there. And that can overheat and cause a fire. So, extension cords, make sure you're using outdoor extension cords when you're outdoor. So what can happen is there are certain extension cords that are only meant for indoor use, or little circuit breakers that are meant for indoor use. Usually it'll say it on there. And those have to be rated running cords under carpets or doorways, those can heat up. And, you know, if they do, if they're running under carpets or doorways, the heat isn't able to disperse. So let's talk about ground fault circuit interrupters. So if you're ever in the bathroom or using a hairdryer, you'll notice the two buttons on there. One is to reset the ground fault circuit interrupter, and the other one is to test it. So essentially what that does is, let's say you drop a hairdryer in the bathtub, essentially senses the circuit is broken and it pops in, so it ends the circuit and makes it so there's no electricity coming through anymore and it won't cause an electrocution. So you want to make sure to test those regularly, make sure they're working. Last thing, in the event of an electrical fire, you want to make sure to have a Class C fire extinguisher. So there's different classes of fire extinguishers. For example, there's one, I don't know the exact class, but it's filled with water. And that's not something you want to use on an electrical fire, as you can imagine. And so essentially, Class C fire extinguishers, they carry a wet chemical and that is safe to use on fires. Electrical fires. That is it.
Tim, I have to be honest and say when I saw your presentation, it conjured up an image that I had sent within the last week to our manager. And that was, electrical safety first, and I'm really glad you did this, but it was a picture of the base of a meter on a pole on a sidewalk in a city, and the bottom had been knocked off and the bare wires were exposed at eye level, and I thought, wow, safety first. So this is really timely in my eyes, but by the way, neither you nor I will probably be accused of using a hairdryer in the bathroom. So
every day.
So anyway, I appreciated your safety minute. I really did. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I have a question for any of you or anybody else in the audience. So we often talk about fire extinguishers, but one of the things that I've become aware and I've actually used it twice is a fire blanket. My barbecue area, when my son forgets to turn my barbecue off and grease catches on fire, just threw this I think it's fiberglass blanket over the top. And I've seen that used in kitchens too, where you can get all the mess. Is that a appropriate and safe you recommend now?
Yeah, so especially for kitchen fires, that's something you can use. Like, for example, if you have a old pan of oil that catches on fire, obviously the worst thing to do is to throw a bucket of water on that, because immediately that would burst into flames and make the fire even worse and spread. Essentially you want to suffocate any sort of kitchen fire. So if you have a pot of oil, for example, catch a fire, you want to try to put a lid on that, and that suffocates it without causing any increased risk. So the same thing for the fire blanket. Assuming that it is designed for that use. I'm not familiar specifically with any fire blankets, but I'm sure using them on a kitchen fire would be appropriate, assuming the manufacturer approves that. So.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Since I don't read it, you pull the tab on the bottom and it drops out. You put on the fire.
I'll have to buy one of those for my barbecue. That sounds like a good idea.
Thank you very much.
Mr. McKenna, so that makes me think of in the Netherlands, there was a lot of concern about ferries and electric vehicles on the ferry. So should an electric vehicle catch on fire, it's like 45,000 gallons of water. And so they actually have with their local EMTs and fire department created large blankets to suppress the fire should a fire or a car ignite on the ferry. allowing them time to get safely to harbor. At that point, the vehicle gets craned and put into a big tub, basically a container full of water where it's submerged until it goes out. But those electric blankets are pretty significant.
I'd like to move Resolution 6 to the regular agenda, please.
Anything else? Oh, it helps to turn it on.
Sorry.
All right. So, commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us, excluding item number 6. Do I have a motion for the consent agenda?
Move the approval of the amended consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor of the amended consent agenda, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, so Kirk, we're on to the regular agenda.
Okay, I'd like to invite George Velasquez up for agenda item number 6. This is a resolution ratifying change order numbers 1 through 15, authorizing final acceptance of work performed under contract number 16-53 for the supply of Rocky Reach units C8 through 11 head covers with Andritz Hydro Corporation of Charlotte, North Carolina, and authorizing payment of retainage. Welcome, George and Brett.
Good morning, commissioners. Again, George Velasquez. I'm the manager for our Rocky Reach Lake Chelan Steak and Project Delivery Office.
And I'm Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission.
So a little bit of history on this, a little bit of background. District awarded contract 1653 to Andritz Hydro, and their scope of work was to manufacture 4 outer head covers. These 4 outer head covers were for the 4 large units, C8 through C11. The contract was completed, and through a series of field work orders that were required, extended through November of 2023. So subsequent to that, all the contractual work has been done. We've closed out the project, and Andritz has submitted all of their required documentation. There was a series, like I mentioned, of field work orders that were processed throughout the whole contract, a total of about 15 field work orders. All this work was required to complete the contract. We did exercise some options in that contract through field work order that were exercised and delivered. One of the lessons learned on this one that I'd like to point out, these are very large components. Outer head covers are excess of 50, 60 foot diameter, massive steel components. And they're finely machined. There's some fine machining that's done on a lot of these various surfaces that connect to the rest of the components in the pit. And if you don't have atmosphere control and storage for those, these things tend to get flash rust. So one of the lessons learned is to ensure that we have that storage available. At the time of order, we did not, and we figured that we would package them and put decondescents inside to keep the humidity low. And apparently it didn't work, so we ended up having to do some cleanup on certain areas because we did get some of that flash rust on those fine machine surfaces. So the lesson learned is ensure you've got space. If you don't, we can go out, find some, and rent some. That way it would avoid future cleanup and machining of those parts.
You might either you or Brett go through this is one component of a lot of different components on the C8-11 repairs. You might go back to starting at 2013, and I think Commissioner Bergeron remembers actually declaring the emergency for the head covers, but you might just provide the board an update on all the different components of this project and the history of it.
Yeah, certainly. So I'll go back even a little bit farther, Commissioner Bergeron. So in 1998 through 2001, the district refurbished units C8 to C11 and actually converted them from fixed pitch propellers to variable pitched. And so those were all four refurbished. In 2013, we started to see with unit C8 blade deviations. And we did some investigations, and it looked like that might be systemic to all four of the units. So in 2014, we contracted with Voith to help us evaluate what was happening with those blade deviations. And then we also did a holistic analysis because we identified that there might be some issues with the design. So we evaluated all the turbine components, so wicket gates, head covers, everything on the inside of those new units. And we identified one of the components was the head covers. The outer head cover needed to be strengthened if we wanted to get the intended design life of 40 years. So in 2015, C8 was disassembled. We sent all the components to Voice Shop, and we identified that the head cover that was removed had significant cracking. So Voice started to do repairs to that. And then as they were doing the repairs, additional cracks were found, and then we actually realized that the head component was not manufactured to the print. It was a series of stacked plates. And so they recommended to us that we not try to refurbish the other head cover. So we did the contract. We got pricing. Andres provided the best pricing, so we awarded this contract, $1,653, to them. And as Voice was proceeding, we identified that head covers might take 18 months to 2 years to acquire. So that's why we wanted to initiate that contract, so that we wouldn't have a delay in repairs. It was learned that a little bit later that Voith wouldn't even be able to repair that existing head cover. So there's a field work order in here to accelerate the first head cover. We purchased three to accelerate manufacture of the first one and then add a fourth one. And so we got the first head cover, installed it, and then we proceeded to C9. While we were working on C9, we actually found that unit C1 to C7 were having blade trunnion issues with oil leaks. We worked on that for about a year, identified that those units would need to have their blade trunnion bushings replaced. And so we stopped the C8 to C11 program because those units were still operable and running, but in a fixed pitch position, and proceeded to use our district crews to repair C1 to C7, which took about 4 years, and that took until 2023. And then we restarted the C10 to C11 program. And now that C11 is nearing completion, we know that that head cover fits, and C10's head cover has been line bored to match the bottom ring, so we know that that head cover will work, so time to close the contract.
No, really thank you for the update. I do remember we've had some chronic issues with 8 through 11, I guess, and I'm just curious now, does this complete this? Because it's been a long time since we've found the problems, and now that we're actually completing, do you see any other issues associated with these large units?
With C8 to C11, again, the turbines have been reassembled, and they've actually been put in the hole, and we're about 3 months away from commissioning C11, and C10's runner hub has been returned, and our crews are going to be starting to reassemble that. C8 and C9 have been running for multiple years, so we believe that the fix fixes that Voith designed seem to be the right ones, and we're looking forward to another 30 years of life.
Yeah, those are real efficient units when they're running. So, anyway, I appreciate you coming in here. I thought it would be important for you to talk about this and show the history of this, because it has gone a long time, and we're finally getting to that point where we can say, well, this is a success. We did it, because, you know, the shafts were cracked, everything. You know, we we've been through a lot with those units. So, thank you for the history. Thank you for the update. And we look forward to a long generation of those units. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Okay. Moving on to Tim.
Resolution 10, I'd like to invite Bill Sanborn up. This is a resolution accepting the bid of Xylem One LLC of Norfolk, Virginia, and Asplund Tree Expert LLC of Woodinville, Washington, to provide district tree trimming under solicitation 24-13855. Is that Xylem One or Xylem I, or is it one?
It's Xylem One.
Oh.
Yep. Okay. Well, good morning, commissioners. Like Kirk said, my name is Bill Sanborn. I manage the utility vegetation management program here. And today's resolution is for accepting Xylem One from Northport, Virginia, and Asplund Tree Expert Company from Woodinville, Washington. November 18th of last year, 2024, the district invited sealed bids for solicitation 24-13855 for district tree trimming. And on December 17th, we received three bids for the bid proposal opening. This is a three-year initial term contract with a potential to extend for one additional year. Xylem One is the lowest responsible bidder for the three-year contract at $9,458,460. And Asplund Tree is the second lowest bidder for the three-year term of $11,159,957. This solicitation includes an option for the district to have a secondary awardee, and as well as a primary awardee. This gives the district alternatives to call out additional resources if the primary awardee is unable to fulfill the request from the district. This contract is made up of both unit pricing and hourly rates. And the district's vegetation management, back in 2020, we changed the way we do the pruning and the inspections. Now we call it the 421. And it basically, we're inspecting the wires more often, and we're pruning further distances on the trees to keep the trees away from the power lines. This is, as you are probably well aware, this is a very important fire mitigation practice that we're doing. In vegetation management, we face several challenges. The ongoing of declining forest, we'll go through a circuit, we think we have it all done, and we'll walk back through 4 months later, and there might be, you know, 10 new dead trees that have been killed by insects. So, ongoing challenge with that. We have a longer, drier fire seasons now, and then it's also been a challenge to actually for the contractors to provide the people to do the work. So that's an ongoing challenge as well. So in the resolution, there's on page two, there's a table there, table two. Basically, we allow for a 3% increase on the prices per year with the contractor. That's built into the contract. So the action request from this resolution is to accept Xylem Tree Service as the lowest responsible bidder for the contract term of $13,190,000. And let me rephrase that, $13,190,224 as the primary awardee, and Asplund Tree Expert Company as the second lowest awardee for the four-year term of for $2 million. So with all that said, are there any questions?
last several years, as you indicated, placed quite an increased emphasis on our tree trimming because of wildfire mitigation. You know, rough numbers, how much have we increased our intensity of tree management in the last 10 years? Is it doubled?
Yeah, I would say it's doubled. Yeah. We do a lot of, we used to prune a lot of trees. Now we're doing a lot of cutting down the trees to try and get them out from under the wires. So we've increased, I don't have the exact numbers, but we're up more around 5,000 trees that we remove a year as opposed to maybe closer to 1,000 trees a year back 10 years ago. So that's one thing. And like I said, we're increasing our dimension of what we're clearing. So we're taking the trees back 15 feet as opposed to 10 feet back or so.
No, it's good that you're doing it. I mean, it really is. That's, you know, we all know the potential for wildfire and the potential on our insurance rates.
Right.
I mean, there's a multitude of issues there. So thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Gary?
Thank you. We last summer, Commissioner Allen and I took a tour up by Dead Horse Canyon just to take a look up there. And I was shocked at how narrow that corridor is for those transmission lines to get across the mountain range there. Is that an area of focus where you're looking at widening that corridor up there?
So there is a project in the works for the transmission department.
She's helping with the iPad. Just keep going.
I see some moving going on. Okay, so the transmission department, I believe, is working on a project too. The district, we have a 100-foot right-of-way through there, through Dead Horse Canyon, Sun Edge Canyon. We have not, over the years, expanded it to the full 100-foot wide. So there's a project in the works to rebuild that section of line. It's right now, it's two poles usually. It's going to go to single poles, single steel poles, taller poles, and then widen the right-of-way in that area. And then working with the Forest Service as well, there's discussion of continuing to thin the forest further back to create kind of a shelter in there for that.
Great. That's good.
Can I ask how you got into Dead Horse Canyon?
Well, we didn't get into Dead Horse Canyon. We got to the beginning of Dead Horse Canyon, and we looked back up south, east.
Okay.
And it appeared to me, of course, we're quite a distance away, some of those trees were taller than the transmission lines.
Oh, all of them are.
Yeah. I was being kind.
Yeah. And they're probably about three times taller than the tree line. So there's big timber back there.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very remote. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good question.
Pardon?
Bill, you mentioned that contractors are having trouble hiring people. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Are they subject to prevailing wage, or is it just curious?
Yeah, they are. And so also in the tree trimming, you know, these types of contracts, they have to be qualified to work in the what we call the MAD zone, the hot zone close to the power lines.
Oh.
So they go through a two-year apprenticeship program through the union, and then they get journeyman ticketed as a journeyman tree trimmer.
Oh.
So it's a long process for them to become qualified to work in that hot zone, but they are paid union scale wages.
Okay, so, but it's not just hire somebody off the street here.
It's not that easy.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, that's interesting. I didn't know that, and that would seem appropriate. So,
Yeah, it's a great trade for the right person to get into. So.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else?
I thought Bill has a couple of teammates here. You might introduce them to the board. I know with, you know, related to the question, the volume of our work has gone up substantially, and so that means there's more work for the district to actually do for the inspection purposes and to get out in the cycle that Bill was talking about. So maybe you could introduce your teammates here.
Sure. Yeah, so I've managed the department, and there's three of us, or there's three people that I work with in the department. The most recent hire is Cole Worrell, who's sitting in the back here. Cole, you can stand up if you'd like. Cole's a local guy, grew up in Kashmir, Leavenworth area, came to the district last year, and has been a great addition. Cole also came from the contracting world as well, so he's been a good resource with that. And then Bryce Johnson is sitting next to him. Bryce came to the district, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. I should know that, but another great asset to the district as well. And then the third person is Dave Falkenberry. He's not here today, but he's been at the district, I think, since 2006. And Steve, you had mentioned you back, you were at the school district 25 years ago. Well, I started here at the district 25 years ago. So it's been a great, great career.
Question that I have, when you cut back further away from the lines and you're working with the Forest Service and that's one owner that you're dealing with, what's the challenge that you also run into or may run into with private ownership? Do you?
Private ownership, well, the challenges are some people don't want the tree cut. Some people think the way we cut the trees away from the power lines is butchering. Some people don't understand it, but when you spend time with them and educate them on what you're doing and why you're doing it, then they're a lot more agreeable with what you're doing. Some people most of people appreciate what we're doing, understand why we're doing it. You know, they see these horrible fires that start on the West Coast and don't want anything to do with that. But oftentimes we'll get calls and people will actually, they want us to cut their tree down. So that's always a win-win for them. We have the expertise to come in and cut the tree down safely and get it on the ground.
Right.
So,
yeah. Anything else?
So you have trouble sometimes going through some areas that are heavily forested or private ownership trees or whatever. In some of those cases, is it appropriate to go underground? If it's something that we have to keep coming back over, you have to do over and over again.
Right.
Would that make sense? I
didn't quite hear the whole question. So you're asking.
Well, is it appropriate to just, instead of continually going back in the same areas that have
right.
a problem, they don't want their tree cut down, whatever. Would that make sense to go underground?
Oh.
With those lines rather than,
right.
I'm sure you're faced with that every day, but I just.
Yeah. I mean, obviously going underground would take care of a lot of the vegetation issues, but going underground with power, I don't know if we have the expertise, so I'm sure we do in a room here, but it's, you know, it's very costly. It's a whole new set of problems. So I guess if there was maybe a historic tree or a tree of really good value and the district was like, we need to cut this tree down, but an alternative would be to go underground, maybe that's a scenario. But I think a lot of times it's probably cost prohibitive to go underground just to save a tree here and there.
Well, I'm not talking about just saving a tree, but it's just a problem area, a chronic area that has just the issue over and over and over,
oh, okay.
and over again.
Right. Yeah, I understand.
Are we looking at that?
Yes, we're definitely looking at that. In fact, so River Road and Plain, that's an area that's being done. It's one way in, one way out. It's you know, if a fire were to get going, it'd be a potentially bad scenario. There's, I believe, up at Lake Wenatchee, possibly on the south side, we're looking at that. On Cedar Brae, which is just continuous tree problems up there. There's I think even up at Lake Chelan, a few areas have been looked at, or maybe the further out on the lake, they've gone underground on South Shore.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I'm just curious if we're still looking at those options.
Yeah, we're definitely looking at options to go underground.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I just add that as part of our fire mitigation risk strategy is to evaluate these areas where there is high fire danger on the distribution level, not on the transmission level, but on the distribution level.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, thank you.
Ready for agenda item number 11?
Number 11.
Okay, I'd like to invite Chris Blaine up. This is a resolution rescinding and replacing resolution number 22-14640 and adopting new telecom rates for wholesale telecommunication services by service providers on the district broadband system. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, Commissioners. Again, Chris Blaine, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. And this resolution is, like I said, updating services, adding new services, and then removing a couple of services from being ordered in the future. The services to be removed would be voice service, telephone service that has been delivered via the district network previously, remove that and have the service providers provide the service over the top of the data connection instead. And then the other one is the RF video service to be removed, which is the same methodology: remove the district's involvement and let them deliver via IP over the top of the data links. The services that they will be adding is changing to the data local loops, which are the DLLs, moving all of the base level services from 100 symmetrical to 500 symmetrical service, keeping the same rate involved for residents and the business static, and then adding in 2.5 gig symmetrical and 5 gigabit symmetrical services as new offerings. Also, some name change to the current business offering, changing it to business static to differentiate that was designed originally as a specialty service with some different routing and other features that come with it. So identify that, and then creating the business basic, which will be similar to the residential but for businesses to deliver just general internet services. And then the business basic will have all four of those services available, 500, 1 gig, 2.5 gig, and 5 gig available to them. And these will are requesting to go into effect as of March 1st of 2025.
Questions? Chris? All right. Thank you, Chris.
All right. Thank you.
So, Commissioners, we have resolutions 6, 10, and 11 in front of us. Do I hear a motion?
I move to approve resolution 6, 10, and 11 as presented.
I'll second. Any further discussion? Okay, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor of resolution 6, 10, and 11, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motions, resolutions pass. Kirk, we're on to item number 12, manager items.
Okay, I've got a few items here. I'd like to invite Ian Hunter up. Ian is our Chief Dam Safety Engineer, and that is a title that FERC requires us to have. So along with it comes a big responsibility to oversee our dam safety program. And as part of that oversight, Ian performs an annual review of the dam safety program. The owner's dam safety program is documented, and he's done a thorough review. Thought it'd be important for him to just give you a summary level perspective of his review and then what our focus areas are going to be for 2025 on improving our program. Welcome.
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, Commissioners. Again, Ian Hunter. I'm the Chief Dam Safety Engineer for the district and Engineering Manager. As Kirk mentioned, we're required to do an annual review. I'm required to do an annual review of our owner's dam safety program at the end of each year and then report the findings to our senior management. And so just wanted to give you a few highlights of that review. I think you were given a copy of the memo that I wrote to Kirk summarizing my review. A few things that I wanted to cover this morning is some of the things that were recognized in 2024. There were some staff and organizational changes that affected our owner's dam safety program. One of those was the promotion of me into the Chief Dam Safety Engineering role, and that was an effort of succession planning as the predecessor, Mr. Bill Christman, is planning for retirement, and so The district recognized the need to make sure that we had good continuity there. We also, a few months ago, hired my backfill, which is Court Hill. He's been with the district for a long time, 20 years or more, and he's been a great addition to the team, and I feel like we're set up for success with our current staffing. And so that was a lot of good things that happened as far as staffing organizational. We did, as you know, there's been some other organizational changes that affect key roles in our owner's dam safety program. We recently hired John Sagasser as the director of G&T operations, and that'll be somebody that I work closely with since we work so closely with the hydro operators. We now have regular meetings with generation and transmission management and staff to communicate dam safety issues and provide updates on dam safety initiatives, and I think that's another good improvement that was made in 2024. Utilizing our online Learn 365 learning management tool to track the acknowledgement of the roles and responsibilities for all of the people identified in the owner's dam safety program is another improvement, so process improvement that was implemented last year. And then finally, we created a dam safety awareness training that was rolled out to about a third of our employees, and it was just a general review of Chelan PUD's dam safety objectives and expectations. What is dam safety and why is it important, that kind of thing. And so that was rolled out this year. Gotten a lot of positive feedback on that, and just kind of getting the awareness out there of why dam safety is critical to the district. And then finally, identifying a few areas that we're looking to improve upon in 2025, a more defined training program for the dam safety engineers and others involved in Chelan PUD's dam safety, as well as improvements to our existing surveillance and monitoring programs. Those are programs that identify ways to monitor our dam's performance so that we can hopefully become aware of issues before they become emergencies. So looking to automate more instrumentation and looking for process improvements for how that data is collected and analyzed. And then finally, in 2025, I plan to utilize a maturity matrix for self-evaluation of our dam safety program. And so that's becoming an industry standard, a way for dam owners to look at your dam safety program objectively and then find areas where you're looking or might want to improve, and then also identify areas that you're meeting or exceeding industry practices. So if you have any questions for me on my review or anything else related to dam safety, I'll go ahead and open it up.
In a recent tour up at Rocky Reach, I became aware of, and I got to see for the first time, the laser sensors on various concrete structures up at Rocky Reach and the accuracy that those are just monitoring constantly 24 hours a day. Was quite impressive. Has that been completed every place, or is that in a plan?
Yeah, so we first rolled that out. I believe the first instrument was installed at Chelan Dam in 2018, and it performed well, and so then we added three instruments for Rocky Reach and one at Rock Island. The shorter the distance, the shots, the better the accuracy we get. We have been dealing with a few issues, especially at the Rock Island system, because the distances are so long. So I'd say we're still kind of working out some of the kinks with that system. We did get an external party to review our program, and they provided some recommendations on how to improve that system. But that is a system that we're wanting to continue to invest in, because I think it does have a lot of promise.
That's great.
You can imagine just, the this is one of those great examples of the evolution of technology. It used to be that we'd hire a surveyor that would come out once a quarter and spend probably a couple of days, if not a week, out on the all the projects doing the surveys, and then it would be, you know, months later you'd get a report that showed, you know, what was happening. And now, you know, the technology is advancing so that these guys, and that's part of the effort that he's talking about on getting their arms around the data and really trying to understand how do we use this so that we know rather than waiting for a surveyor and a report to come back. Yeah, pretty remarkable.
I thought it was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And the use of drones is becoming more and more prevalent in dam safety monitoring. The level of accuracy that you can get in some of that equipment is impressive, and we've dabbled in it, you know, hiring some specialized contractors to come in and do some specialized surveys of some of our structures, and that's showing a lot of promise, too. They're still, you know, still, I'd say, relatively new for the precision that we're typically looking for. It's still in development, but I think that's going to be an area where we're going to probably spend a little bit more energy in, above and below water.
Thank you for the update.
I just wanted to tell you that I feel this memo is highly valuable, and I know it takes a lot of time to put it together. One of the main reasons I find the value in it is it's available, hopefully, to the public, which gives reassurances to the work that we do and how important we take the safety of our dams and also the public as a whole. So I really wanted to thank you for this. I see it as one of those go-to documents when talking to members of the community. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And, yeah, you reminded me of something else that was done in 2024 that's related to the public, and that was a functional exercise of our emergency action plans. And that we did that with the other mid-sea PUDs, and so it was a very well-attended. I think there was about 80 emergency management agencies that attended, and it was a very successful exercise testing our emergency action plan. So,
thank you.
Anything else? Thanks, Kelly. All right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Nice to meet you.
You too. I'd like to invite Mark Mullins up. Mark's going to share what our plan is for 2025 quarterly reporting to the board that you've been accustomed to and how that's changing. And Mark is filling in on short notice with Sri. Sri is ill today, so Mark is pinch hitting here, and the right person to pinch hit because he's been involved all along the way on the district reporting. So thanks, Mark.
Yep, you're welcome. Glad to be here. There, I think there is a presentation, Teresa. Good morning, Commissioners. Mark Mullins, Director, Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics. And today I'm going to provide a brief update on what we're thinking for 2025 with respect to performance plan reporting. So today we're going to cover, and just a refresher of what we typically do from a performance plan reporting perspective, but also give you an update on what we're thinking going forward from a reporting perspective as it relates to the Strategic Vision 2075 process that is still underway, although we're at a significant point right now, and also share why we still don't have the details quite yet, an interim proposal for what we might want to consider for 2025 reporting. So today we're seeking board feedback, if any, or a head nod that what we're looking at is supported, but there is no action required today formally. So our typical annual process for business planning and performance planning looks somewhat like this. We typically have a five-year strategic plan in place. The one we most recently had was 2020 through 2024. As you all know, it's 2025. So typically when we do have that strategic plan, we develop a five-year business plan annually, and we identify what those five-year priorities are that support that strategic plan, and then we present that to the board in October. This year, if you recall, we're in this in-between place between strategic plans and our strategic visioning. We presented a one-year bridge plan, which is effectively carrying forward our prior business plan to year two. And that's what we presented on October 7th of last year. and the priorities that we are going to be focusing on. Once we have that in place, our typical process is we initiate the budget process, which includes an overview, two public hearings, and then ultimately going to the board for approval of that budget. And that one-year budget reflects the expenditures associated with executing on that business plan. That includes our O&M capital and also our debt expenditures as well to ensure alignment with the priorities that we presented during the business planning process, ultimately aligning with our strategic plan. Once we have that budget approved, we put pen to paper and we identify specifically what those actions are, the tactical goals, so to speak. What are the things that we want the board to be aware of and how we're progressing against those goals? So specific projects, metrics, milestones, that roll up under that five-year business plan. The board approves those at a meeting like today during the first meeting in January or no later than the second board meeting in January to show support for this is what we're going to be working on at the highest priority for the district going forward, and this is what we'll report on. So we have a quarterly reporting process where we've developed a performance plan, balanced scorecard, so to speak, under the 8 strategic objectives associated with our prior strategic plans, and then we report on those strategic initiatives, critical actions, and tasks in a stoplight report. So green, we're on track, yellow is caution, red, we're off track, or we didn't meet a deadline, for example, or blue, we're complete, and we are successful in meeting that goal. So that's what we've typically done. So with consideration of the Strategic Vision 2075 document and the 50-year forward-looking efforts that have really taken place over the last year plus, and now we have a foundational, a guidebook, so to speak, there's going to be a number of next steps associated with operationalizing that strategic vision. One of the things that we're thinking about is reporting going forward. So we need to focus on the longer-term strategic goals that will be set, rather than just focusing on the individual projects, for example, and how we're proceeding on those projects as we've done in the past. We don't want to lose that capability to report on projects specifically or updates on our financials and our budget. We'll continue things like our quarterly financial updates, our quarterly energy resources updates, load forecast updates, and how we're doing with substation planning. Those things will continue, but we really want to transform or transition to more of a strategic look from a reporting perspective as opposed to just the tactical project-oriented items that we've been reporting in the past. So part of the 50-year visioning next steps, and you'll hear more from Justin Erickson and Felicity Saberhagen and others, includes building a reporting process for those strategic directives that are in play or in process right now being defined by the end of Q2. So recognizing we're in this in-between place rather than doing what we've traditionally done, we want to focus on things a little bit differently. And included in those efforts is transforming our focus not just on the projects but also focusing on our business capability. What are the things that we need to do as a utility and organization to successfully provide those essential services to the community? So identifying and defining business capabilities, building and growing and measuring those business capabilities. And the idea is if we get those right, then we're going to get the projects right that we've been reporting on. So that's the new thinking. So while the details aren't defined yet, but from an interim proposal perspective, we would like to propose that we discontinue the balanced scorecard or stoplight report that we've done in the past for 2025, recognizing that there's a lot of work on next steps going on with the Strategic Visioning 2075. And then on behalf of the senior management team, ask the board if to move forward with developing a new reporting approach with respect to ensuring the board has a good update on our 2025 strategic goals that we identified through the strategic, through the business planning process and presented on October of last year. So those goals that we defined in that business plan, investing in assets and people, so not losing sight of we want to improve hydro capability, we want to improve distribution reliability, we want to advance in our wildfire mitigation strategies, advance in our human and organizational performance, recognize we have a technology roadmap that we want to move forward with and enhancing our customer experience. So those things will continue. Financial resiliency, ensuring that we're bringing forward a clean audit opinion, that we're maintaining those strong financial metrics, but also that we've maintained those strong relationships with our credit rating agencies to maintain that AA and AA plus rating. Continuing work on the public power benefit or programs under that, fiber expansion, for example, Riverfront Park, 5th Street, Electric Avenue, all those things associated under the public power benefit program. And also looking at countywide efforts, supporting the county with fuels reduction to help with wildfire mitigation, but also ensuring that the 5th Street development project goes in accordance with how the community visions as well. So continuing with those strategic goals. So spending the first quarter identifying what that transitionary reporting approach might look like is what we're seeking today is your support. And then coming back in April with a reporting approach on an interim basis, recognizing that there's going to be a lot more work going on with strategic visioning to identify what we do on the longer term going forward. As you know, there will be next steps coming and how we operationalize that 50-year vision, so all of that work will continue while we're continuing to advance on these strategic goals that we've identified. In the appendix, you'll find just a couple of slides that reminds the board of what those strategic goals are, as well as kind of a modified approach of what we're looking at for this year. But I would like to open it up for questions, if there are any, on kind of what we're looking at and recognizing we still have more work to do on the details on what that'll look like, but wanted to get any feedback here today.
So thanks, Mark. I'll just kick off with a few comments for myself. This is an interesting time for us as an organization because what you're presenting is this is kind of the old method that we used in reporting, and we're moving to doing something different. Stay tuned. But we've got a lot of work to do to get to whatever that's going to be. And at the same hand, the commissioners are working hard and doing things much differently and spending time working on things like policies, strategic directives coming up with that, which will then continue to guide the vision and strategic planning in the future. So we're all doing our part. And we're all going to be really busy, and we're asking, for example, I'll give you another example, our balanced scorecard that we've been using as a board, it's good information, but and we're going to have to come back and talk about that in the future, but we put that on hold because we're spending a lot of time. It's not that those things are not important and we need to stop reviewing them, but we wanted to spend some time and really confirm what it is that's important that we need to evaluate and report on and work on ourselves. So I, for one, am fine discontinuing that performance plan as is, with anticipation and hope and excitement for what it could look like in the future. And just from my opinion, and we haven't talked about this, but and I'm going to go back and use us as an example. I think what you're going to see from us in the future is a perpetual review of at each one of our meetings of reviewing where we're at on our priorities and our policies. We're just going to constantly be looking at that. How are we doing? Where are we going? What's our performance as a board and as an organization? I think anything that you can do that looks at the typical performance plan items that relate to our
our strategic visioning and those priorities that can give us real-time data, dashboard. You can look at something anytime. Any of us could get on and look at that dashboard and, oh, okay, well, we dipped here, or we've risen here, or we've, you know, and we can look forward to those quarterly reports, but we don't have to wait for those quarterly reports. We can be asking questions in a live setting as we go forward, as the organization goes forward. Technology gives us an edge there. And so that's just my opinion. I'm excited about what you're doing, what you presented here. And I'm really looking forward with great anticipation what you come up with.
Very good.
Just as I'm looking forward to what we come up with.
We're in this very unique time right now, kind of in between places. So trying to identify, you know, really looking forward. So not looking backwards, recognizing that we have a lot of work that's still on the plate, a lot of work that's in progress. We want to report to the board and public on how we're proceeding against those goals that we've already established. But then again, recognizing we do have a path forward that looks a little bit different with respect to longer-term visioning and strategic goals that will be defined as strategic directives, and identifying that reporting approach that gives the board the information that they need in order to course correct if we're not meeting that progress that as you're expected, or showing our progress on how well we're doing against some of those strategic directives. So a lot of things we're still working on with respect, a lot of change that's going on right now. I really liked your comments on a real-time dashboard. I would love to get to that place too, because having real-time information is better than three-month-old information, for example. So that's something that we want to leverage data in a manner and leverage our technology resources that we do have and software that we do have to go down that path, and hopefully we can get to that place where we can have that real-time reporting and dashboard look. Some more things to come. It's an exciting time.
Commissioners?
If I may, I would like to applaud you because, you know, this was a moment where you could have chosen to continue doing what the methodology that has always been used. But this really, by coming out, meeting one after decisions that were made, and to harness that energy that says we want change, we know we need change, and to be bold enough to sit here and to present it not knowing how it was going to sit is pretty powerful from your department. So thank you to all of you for working on it. And what that tells me is that you guys have a lot of leadership initiative, and I'm looking forward to where this goes. You know, it would have been easy to do what we've always done, but then we'll be what we've always been. And I believe through this whole strategic planning, our goal is to become something different. So I applaud you again for taking the initiative here. Meeting one, 2025, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for that feedback. I do want to say that Sri Dalit really deserves a lot of credit here as well. And really challenging our executive team, asking the hard questions of, is this what we should be doing? So it's not just me by any means, but the executive team, and for really looking at this really closely, spending some quality time together, examining how we want to approach this going forward, but asking the tough questions. So I credit Sri with initiating some of those discussions as well. So thank you for that feedback.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to just chime in, and Kelly, you hit it spot on. Good analysis. Thank you. And I want to piggyback on what you said, that this is just one more example of our staff, the willingness to be creative and the willingness to take a very difficult task on and really examine it. And my sense tells me that there's more of this type of thinking happening throughout the district. But you've brought it forward to the commission, which is absolutely wonderful. As we, as commissioners, really started to embrace the concept of a 50-year strategic plan, you realize rather rapidly that change is scary, change is difficult. When you have a large organization like we have, it's much safer and more comfortable to not change and just keep doing what you've done in the past. But then there's that statement that is often attributed to Einstein, which he did not say, and that is that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and looking for different results. We truly are going to embrace the fear of doing something different, going down a path that we've not been on before, all of us, including the commission, and trying really to unharness the power that this organization has at its fingertips. And our staff is up for the task. You and Shree and your department are evidence of that. You're the vocal evidence of it. But like I say, my sense tells me that this is going on throughout the entire district as people are becoming more comfortable with this 50-year strategic visioning process, the path we're on, and the results that we're trying to achieve that aren't crystal clear at this point and likely to change many times between now and 50 years. So I'm honored to work here. I'm honored to associate myself with the staff at this organization. And this is just one more example of world-class thinking on the part of the staff at the PUD. So thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for those comments. I'll pass that on as well.
Please.
It's an exciting time.
It is.
I have one question. Again, thanks, Mark. This is really great to see this and see the approach that we're taking. A little bit progressive, and I think that's where the fear comes from a little bit, because where we are doing different things. The one thing that I find very important, and one of the things I consider a strategic goal, is customer service. I mean, that's why we're here, right? And I think that should be set pretty high as far as our goals as we improve our, and we're doing that by having, you know, solid utility, solid assets, and solid financial. But we the goal is service to the public. And so if we keep that in mind as we move forward, I think that's really important. And can you define what customer experience is? What do you mean by that? And then maybe, you know, speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned that. The customer has been at the top of our balance scorecard for a very long time, and that's the first strategic objective that we report under. So we're measuring through different surveys that we do every other year how the public is viewing us and how we're providing those services to our community. So while we do have those strong ratings that were evidenced through those reports and surveys that we've done, we always want to continue to advance and provide our customer owners with not only the essential services, but also the experience that we can provide them, whether it's paying their bill, whether it's their experience in the lobby and how we're best serving them, but also giving them access to technology in a way where the AMI meters is a good way, where they can have better understanding of how they're leveraging and utilizing electricity in their home or business, for that matter. So trying to provide more tools for our customer owners, more so than just turning the lights on, and if they go on, that's a good thing, but more so what is their experience? So what tools and technology do they have available to them to better manage their electricity? So if they do want to take a careful look at their bill, how can they manage that in a way that optimizes what they're paying from a billing standpoint, for example? But also, we have this beautiful new building that we're all enjoying. But how do they get to maximize those benefits of this building? So that's something that we'll be looking at, too, is how can we best serve our customer owners in the lobby, for example. So really trying to make it more experiential for the customer in a positive way other than just providing those essential services.
One other concern of mine is, you know, in distribution and major projects, you know, that are maybe a community needs or a contract or whatever, are we focusing on that as well? You know, it's a time is money for a lot of people, and are we trying to facilitate a quicker response. That's customer service also, mm-hmm. not just the individual, but also the major projects. And sometimes these things get delayed for whatever reason, mostly permitting, I would imagine. So are we focusing on that as well as to facilitate some of these projects? That's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Project delivery is going to be really important, and we're setting ourselves from an organization perspective in the right manner to where we can align some of those functional needs internally to best manage those projects using data and technology to better understand how we're progressing against those projects, but also through the strategic visioning and business planning transformation efforts, looking at business capabilities. So learning what those capabilities are for the district, what are those needs and the specific actions that we need to improve upon in order to enable successful project delivery. So that'll be work that's still yet to come on defining what those business capabilities are, but that's just another example of recognizing how important it is to ensure that the capabilities that we have at the district across our organization is effective and performing in the best manner. So more work to come on that, but yeah, that's definitely an area that we want to focus on, is ensuring that we're delivering on the budget that we've set and the projects associated with that budget, doing so within budget, on time, and within scope, but also having that ability to adapt, which will be important.
One other question. Integrated utility, how does that impact what we do moving forward in customer service and, I guess, facilitating what you want to do? Can you speak pros and cons of that?
Well, I think that's an area we're certainly going to have to look at. We've had a lot of discussion on the one utility concept and what that looks like. I do expect we'll take a good, strong look at our business line financial policy metrics, for example, and how we approach that. Things will look differently, and I expect through the strategic directives and the strategic visioning next steps that we'll identify some actions associated with that on how we approach that and how we approach the board with continuing down this path of exploring a one utility concept, for example, of ensuring that we're providing not only the best electric services, but also we're looking at the smaller systems of water and wastewater as well, and ensuring that we're providing those essential services as well for our customer owners. So those are the things that we're going to be focusing on. So there are some pros, of course, with doing that, because we are a district as a whole. We are one utility, and we can provide those services. So having the right processes in place, the right financial policy metrics in place for those business lines, I think will be beneficial to really take a good look at that. So we still need to continue to track our costs associated with that to ensure that from a cost of service perspective and rates are recovering those costs. So we will continue to do those things, and it's just a matter of how we want to report on those going forward.
Yeah. Randy?
Yeah. with everything that's been said, there's not a lot of not a lot left to be said, because my commissioners have covered a lot of it really well, this fundamental change that you're talking about. But it's given me the time to think sort of off the wall, as I have a tendency to do sometimes, about what our future might look like. And I got to thinking about yesterday afternoon. I was in my car during game time, and my phone plugged in. And so I asked this special person that we all know on the phone what the score of the Seahawks game was in real time. And in less than a second, I had my answer, and I think about us as a utility and where we've been. And can somebody tell me, did these even exist when I became a commissioner? I mean, the change that we have facing us, it's been fast, and it's getting faster. And for us to prepare for what that change means to our utility, what we're doing in this visioning process is incredibly important. We're going to be faced with more technology that's different than this. I don't know what it's going to look like. None of us know what it's going to look like. But, you know, we're all being exposed daily now to the impact of artificial intelligence on our lives. And what does that mean? What does it mean to the utility when I can be driving down the street in my car and, you know, ask how much electricity my house is currently using and get that answer in real time? And what's that mean to us as a service provider with our customers? So I'm ready to be done with the red box, green box. Yeah, I'm ready for the next phase, whatever that looks like. I'm anxiously awaiting what you come up with. So thanks for a great presentation.
Very good. Thank you for that feedback. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, I hope this discussion gave you and the team a glimpse of our thinking. And, again, we're modeling the same type of work you guys are going through. We're working, hopefully, as hard as you are, and look forward to the future. So thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all the comments and feedback, and I think we have the direction that we need to move forward, and we'll be coming back in April to share a little bit more about what this might look like.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. You bet. I'd like to invite Heather Ireland up. She's going to give an update on bond ratings. Welcome, Heather.
Commissioners, I do have some good news. I'll start with that. So I know everybody was, you know, concerned about what that was going to be, but it's been my pleasure to get to share good news over the last many, many years, and today it's more of the same. To kind of set the tone a little bit, we do currently work with three different rating agencies for credit opinions. The credit opinions essentially are an independent review of the district's financial and operating conditions. And the intent is to be able to effectively and efficiently communicate with prospective and current bondholders the potential risks that their investments may face. It helps them use a little bit of a shorthand decision-making tool to understand what our profile looks like for them. The benefit of higher credit ratings typically translates to lower costs for the district in a couple of different ways. One is it communicates that there's potentially lower risk to those investments. So investors are willing to demand a lower rate of return for their investment, lower interest rates, which translates to lower costs for us. Higher credit ratings also often give us a favorable negotiating position when we're entering into especially long-term contractual relationships. It allows us to sometimes negotiate terms that we wouldn't otherwise be able to get under those contracts, which are favorable and also then can lower our costs and risks for operations. We do, with all three of those rating agencies, have regular communication throughout the year. I typically send updates. We have conversations back and forth about operations, financial, quarterly financial updates, and also some new and emerging risks. Sometimes they reach out with questions about, we're seeing this go on in the industry. Can you tell us how Chelan's dealing with that? So we do have those regular communications, but all three of the agencies also have internal policies on formal review processes. And their formal review processes are just really a more structured communication form. They typically have specific data requests that they're making, as well as specific list of questions they want to ask. And those questions can be driven, again, by things that are happening in the industry, things that are happening in the general economic climate, and also specific to the utility that they've, you know, heard from us over the years. They might want updates on certain of our programs. Earlier in 2024, I was able to, our team was able to share with the commission that we had gone through those formal review processes with both Moody's and Fitch. And Moody's did affirm our AA2 credit rating, and Fitch affirmed our AA+ credit rating. In December, our CFO, CRO, Sri Krishnan, and also Mark Mullins and myself were able to meet with S&P. So we now have a complete set for 2024. We've gotten to go through all three formal reviews during the year. And I'm really pleased to share that we also received an affirmed credit rating from S&P at a AA+ level. This, again, continues to place us among the top-rated electric utilities in the nation. Their report, which will be available online on our website, did go over some key highlights for the district, some of our key strengths, as well as some risks that our industry faces and how we're working to mitigate those. I did want to share, I thought a quote would probably be the way to summarize how they view us. So our AA plus credit rating reflects S&P's opinion of the district's extremely low cost power resources that contribute to retail rates being among the lowest in the U.S., combined with proactive and comprehensive risk management and financial planning that has resulted in exceptional, sustained financial metrics. And I think that really captures all of the items that they're viewing from us, and also echoes very similarly to both Moody's and Fitch's opinions of the district. To wrap up, I really wanted to point out that if you think through the words of that report, if you look through their report and read how we're mitigating risks, the decision-making that's going on here at the district and our assets that we have available to us, you really get a clear picture that it's not one individual or one team, one group here at the district that has control over all of those factors. It really does require the effort of everyone here. And it's not just even everyone here currently, it's decades and decades of diligent, hard work, you know, heads down, everyone contributing and pulling in the same direction. So I wanted to thank everyone here currently, everyone that has been here, and also the board currently for their vision and commitment to supporting our teams and carrying out our mission. It really has paid off, and this is just one way that we can kind of put a little pin on that and communicate to our ratepayers and the industry as a whole that we are continuing to have effective and efficient operations and financial condition that is truly the envy of many.
Great. Questions for Heather?
Question. I've watched, you know, how we've gone forward with our hedging program for many, many years, and how it got in, how we started with it, and the response from our rating agencies to that program. It's grown over the years, it's matured, and I can see that the rating agencies are showing a little less, I guess, risk in that program. We've proved that over the years, so I applaud you in that and in the district for following that program. And it's really a strong part of what we do. But they still say here that it's a minor exposure to you know, our counterparty risks. So that used to be a big thing. Yeah. What is it now? Is it still the same thing, or is it just there's still a little bit? What is the risk, I guess?
I think the term you used, proving it, I think has gone a long way with the rating agencies. When we implemented the program decades ago, it's been, you know, growing and maturing for the last 20-plus years. We've made a lot of progress in demonstrating that we can secure contracts with credit-worthy counterparties, that we can implement them receiving favorable terms under negotiations, and that we have protections in place to ensure that should those counterparties be in a time of financial stress or operational stress for them, that we're able to protect our interests in those contracts.
But does it have anything to do with the length or term of some of our hedging programs? Is that still an issue? Used to be, you know, the length of it was questionable.
It is challenging because they have kind of dueling priorities. A longer-term contract would be more favorable from the standpoint of it secures revenues for a longer period of time, but only if it's with a credit-worthy counterparty that we're able to effectively manage the terms and conditions of, for example, ensuring that should pricing change or should their credit quality change, we want to make sure the collateral is posted so that we're protected in the case that that counterparty cannot deliver. We can go out and replace power sales with another counterparty and not be financially harmed from that transaction. So long-term is good, except for it introduces a new risk, which is your counterparty management.
That's what I'm getting at, because, you know, sometimes we were talking, I think, you know, it was a credit, it was a, oh, what was the term? I just had it and I forgot it. But anyway, it's a long term is the risk of in the counterparty is the issue whether they have the the backing, I guess.
Yeah, the credit quality of the counterparties is what we're looking for to make
but
sure.
What are we doing to do?
To manage that counterparty credit risk.
So long term.
Long term. So we definitely have strong credit reviews up front when we enter into contracts with counterparties. We're constantly monitoring their credit quality to make sure that they continue to stay credit worthy. And we do
letter of credit. Is that still
letter of credits also come into play under some of those contractual arrangements to ensure that our counterparties are posting collateral, so that if we are at risk for example, if that counterparty was to walk away for some reason, there's a lot of mitigations in the contracts that don't allow them to walk away. But if they were to go bankrupt or if they were in distress, we have that collateral in place to help add that additional layer of protection to ensure that we would not be harmed in the case we would have to go out and replace the contract by selling back into the market under a new contract.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you, Heather. Anything else, commissioners? Great report. Good news. Gary.
Heather, wonderful job. Should turn that on. Wonderful job for you, staff, and as you pointed out, it's a task and results of not just the current staff, but those who've come before all of us to hold the line and take some actions that resulted in where we are today. I did some quick Google work to try to figure out, well, how many utilities across the country are rated AA+, and Google, in all of its AI, could not give me an answer, but they said it's darn few. So, something like that. Anyway, I just want to congratulate you and present staff and also previous staff for bringing us to where we are today. Thank you.
It's a great result.
And I will also share with you that I did chat with somebody who was a retired fund trader, and I was bragging. And he said, "Yeah, well, why don't you issue some more bonds so that we can put those in the funds?" So it doesn't go unnoticed. Thank you.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank you.
Okay, last but not least, thanks, Heather. I'd like to invite Justin Erickson up for an update on City of Leavenworth, Chelan PAD Memo of Understanding to look at district-owned property in Leavenworth.
Good morning, commissioners. Happy New Year. Justin Erickson, Chief Strategy and Stakeholder Officer. I'm excited to provide you this morning an update on where we're at with ongoing discussions with the City of Leavenworth that you're familiar with. I believe you also have a copy of a final draft memorandum of understanding that you've hopefully had a chance to at least peruse a little bit. But by way of background, over the course of the last year or so, we've been having discussions with the City of Leavenworth about their desire to explore opportunities to construct a new municipal campus somewhere in the municipal limits of the City of Leavenworth. And they identified our property that we own. We have about 13 acres located just northeast of Chumstick Highway and Highway 2, that intersection. There and about 20, and we occupy about a quarter of the site, and we have some office space, some warehousing and lay down area space, public auditorium that's available, and then further to the northeast of the site we have a substation, and then some related transmission and distribution corridors there. So of those 13 acres, we occupy approximately quarter or so. And so they identified that surrounding vacant land and as potential for their use and reached out to us to see if we had any interest in exploring what that might look like. And so over the course of the last year, as those discussions have continued, we're now at a point where we can potentially formally evaluate the feasibility of perhaps a portion of that property, knowing that we may have future long-term needs and that we don't want to box ourselves out thinking in terms of a long-term future for that site and in that part of the county. So what this memorandum of understanding does is provides a framework It's non-binding in nature. Neither party is obligated to ultimately sell or exchange funds for any particular purpose. It is simply lays out a framework to begin in earnest an exploratory phase, a greater level of due diligence, if you will, for this property. What the district is getting in return is similar considerations from the city in terms of an evaluation of what our long-term needs are and whether or not there might be property that the city has control or some authority over relative to permitting or other needs that we might have for a new substation or other utility infrastructure. And so, as I mentioned, there is no exchange of funds. Any costs of studies and due diligence would be borne by each party. And we anticipate that this this agreement, if exercised, would be in place for 2 years, although the due diligence could be done in less than that period of time. Are there any questions? There is no formal action required by our board because under the delegated authority resolution, this falls to the general manager or his designee. It's a little bit different for the city of Leavenworth, so they will be formally presenting this to their city council next Tuesday, January 14th at 7 p.m. So I did also want to make you aware of that. The city's been a good partner through these discussions as we've explored opportunities. I would also like to point out that we have been approached over the last several years from other parties about this property. There's public uses nearby as well, including a fire district number three. There's a Chelan County shop and yard area for public works as well. And so this area sort of has a public focus. And so we have been contacted by the Chelan County Sheriff's Department a couple of times over the last several years. Also a nonprofit agency that serves the area called Upper Valley Mend that provides a food bank and other services. And this agreement also contemplates co-location. And so knowing that we've had contact from other public entity, we asked the city if they would be willing to incorporate an analysis to see if their use of the site might also be compatible with a Chelan County Sheriff's Department, say satellite office. They were amenable to that opportunity. The Upper Valley Mend Nonprofit Association, they actually lease property from the city today on another city-owned parcel. And the city was agreeable to terms in the MOU that also allow for a more complete examination of what that partnership long-term between the city and that nonprofit might look like and if their needs could be met comprehensively through this broader analysis as well. So just wanted to point out that we've thought about this broadly and holistically. And it's, I know from my perspective, it's nice to be able to potentially evaluate something in a community where we're able to do less because we have a smaller footprint and we don't have the nexus of a hydroelectric license like we do in Wenatchee and Manson and Chelan and Intiat. And so looking forward to this opportunity. But also want to make it clear that, you know, this does not guarantee that we're going to ultimately sell any property or exchange any land or related consideration.
I appreciate the update, Justin, and I think what I'm really appreciating is the ongoing work of multiple public agencies going into discussions about what their needs are, how we can support each other cooperatively in the region for our customer owners, and with that focus of what's best for the customers of Chelan County. So looking forward to those ongoing discussions and hearing more about that work.
Well, certainly keep the board updated. Presuming this goes forward based on city council action next week.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.
That's all I've got for manager items.
All right. All right, at this time we've got Lisa Sanders for Commissioner Travel, keeping us organized. Thanks for being here, Lisa.
Thank you. All right. I chatted with a couple of you this morning about some changes on your travel that I've noted. So if anyone else has changes, let me know as we go through. We have Waputa coming up.
Lisa, I do have a change on that. Okay. Would it be possible to have my hotel reservation on the 14th?
The 14th
through the 17th. Thank
yes.
you.
Commissioner Bergren, do you want to check in on the 15th still?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. February Waputa meetings, 12 to 14. I have Commissioner Bergren, McKenna, and Smith attending.
And Lisa, because of my education, leading the education committee, I will need to check in on the 11th.
Okay.
And you've already got that change for me for the first 3 months since I'm now a mentor.
Yeah, I haven't. I noted that from yep. speaking this morning. Thank you. And I believe everything for Washington, D.C. in February is set. Unless any of you has seen something that needs to change since the last time we met. March Waputa. I have a couple changes from chats this morning, but otherwise I'll just get the registrations done for those. March 27, quarterly water committee meeting. I'm not sure who wants to attend that. I do have, Commissioner Allen, I have a question mark.
Well, at this point, may I say yes?
You may.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes or no yet? It doesn't, we can wait. It's not a.
March, I still have on
oh,
the,
sorry.
The 18th.
March 27th. I'm sorry, what?
2 weeks in a row. There's two meetings. 2 weeks in a row. 18th we have, but the next week is another one.
The Water Committee?
Yeah.
I was just referring to my need for check-in for the 18th. If you've got that.
Yes, I have you checking in the 18th.
Commissioners, have we taken that far enough?
Well, do we need advanced registration for regional and national meetings? Have we done any of that? We have.
I don't have
May
rooms.
And June.
I don't have rooms held or registrations for the conferences in April in Vancouver.
I was referring specifically to Northwest Public Power and APPA.
I don't have anything for those yet.
I'm guessing that it's time.
Okay. Are you attending?
Both.
Thank you.
I think others will be too, but the rooms, especially with APPA, the room securing is a challenge. I don't know if the block's even open.
So, commissioners, if any of us are that we need to check in with Lisa and let her know our intentions.
Both, Commissioner Allen?
Yes, I'm going.
Both. Anyone else?
Well, put me down for it.
Okay.
Lisa, I'll be going to both.
Thank you.
I'm
checking on one and not APPA in June.
You're going to let a child's high school graduation enter?
I asked if they would change it. They said no.
They didn't?
No.
Do they know who you are?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I'll check on those and watch for room openings.
All right. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
All right. Commission items. Commissioners, do you have anything to get under way? I have none. I thought I saw nobody.
The only thing perhaps you're talking about at our meetings, we'd be doing updates on where we are on the our policy and strategic directives. So we've met on board linkages. That's all I know.
And probably, I'm glad you brought that up, probably would be a good idea on our policy development at least once a month for us to do some sharing so that staff and public know what we're doing with our work and just kind of an update. Does that sound reasonable?
President, with that said.
What's that?
Well, with you saying that, I'll weigh in here on one of the things that I've been working on, and that is with the city of Indiana. They have a park that's PUD owned, and it was a future site of apparently as a substation. And now they use it as a ballpark. It's undeveloped. And I don't know if that's something the utility is going to use in the future. So I met with them, and they gave me a tour of what they're talking about with the mayor. And they're going to finish their long-term city major plan. And that's something that they would like to see developed and possible use of public power benefit to go in or not to help develop that into a more of a like a baseball field, soccer field type thing. They have an easement problem getting into our future site for a substation. And I guess the city, has the right of way through that, and they would have to give us an easement across their property or utilize that so that we can bring big trucks in there if we had to bring a portable unit of some sort. So I think, it was interesting going through that, and that's something that I'm following up on. And hopefully they are working with the district. I think, Justin, you probably have talked to them about it. So that's something I'm very interested in and hope that in the future that we can help the city of Benningham achieve their goal of having some extra facilities for ball games, and it would fit or whatever, and fit into their master plan. So that's what I instructed them, or I guess gave them advice on. Finish your plan, get it in place, and then work with staff in order to maybe help them out. So that's what I've been doing. So just one thing.
Thank you. Any other commissioners' reports? Okay. Follow up on delegation of actions from prior board meetings or today's meeting.
Okay, I've got an update from the December 16th board meeting. We had one action item to report on updating on, and that was Kelly Scott was going to provide information on the Colorado Transmission Authority legislation that the Washington Transmission Authority legislation is modeled after, and she provided that by email to you all on December 17th, and that's the only item I have to report an update on, and it didn't capture any new items today.
Great. Thank you. All right. At this time, I will open the floor up for any additional public comment. Seeing none, hearing none, we will move on. Or do we have any other matters of general business as may necessarily come before the commission today? And we are not having an executive. executive session today?
Correct.
All right. So at this time, I will adjourn the meeting.